You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. I'm not Tom Garcia. I'm not even trying to be Tom, because nobody but Tom Garcia could be Tom Garcia. Those of you familiar with the program or familiar with Tom know that he's a great American. In fact, he's an American Airlines pilot who, in his prior life, was a United States Naval Aviator, a Top Gun instructor, great American. I'm honored to consider him a friend, and I'm certainly honored to be filling in for him Friday evenings on this terrific radio program, and I thank you for joining me today. I hope you've all had a great week. I hope you have a good weekend coming up, and there is so much going on as usual. I sometimes think, as I go through the newspapers and listen to the radio reports and watch television, that I'm standing under Niagara Falls with an 8-ounce water glass, trying to capture all of the information coming at us, trying to capture all that water in that water glass. You know, talk radio is a wonderful medium. People talk about the First Amendment, and we always know, of course, the First Amendment is about freedom of speech and the freedom of the press, freedom of religion, but it's also about the right to peaceably assemble. The Founding Fathers were wise enough to understand that you cannot have true democracy without discourse, debate, perhaps argument. And that's why they said, and right in the First Amendment, right at the top, the right to peaceably assemble, because back then at the founding of this great nation, when the Constitution was signed, the only way to have debate and discourse and discussion was live and in person, face-to-face, nose-to-nose, and toe-to-toe with the person that you were having that argument or discussion with. Of course, today we can still hold those discussions live and in person, and we certainly do so in town hall meetings and in churches and synagogues and schools and people's living rooms and perhaps under a shade tree. But we especially meet these days, peaceably, hopefully, on the internet and on talk radio. And this program on the USA Talk Radio Network, the American Hour, provides us with an hour at the end of every week, or at least workday week, to get together for discussion. I certainly welcome your phone calls if you want to join the conversation. The phone number is 310-982-4145. Again, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired INS senior special agent. I spent 30 years working for what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I was an inspector, I was an agent, I was an adjudications officer, but for the bulk of my career, 26 years, I was a special agent, and I enforced those immigration laws out on the streets throughout the southern half of New York State, and of course, on occasion, my duties required that I traveled outside of New York, but that's my background, and half of those years as an agent were spent as a part of the Drug Task Force. I was assigned to DEA Intelligence. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. And after the attacks of 9/11, I decided that having witnessed the horrors of those attacks up close and in person here in New York, that I needed to provide my perspective to the debate. Because so much is said about immigration, and unfortunately so much of it is wrong. It is misinformation. It's mythology. Sometimes people get it wrong because they don't know better. Sometimes they get it wrong because there's an agenda in play. So for me, my mission has been to get people to understand the issue from the perspective of a field agent, and that's why I'm here, and I hope that that's why you're here. You know, in addition to all the other things that I've done in my career and since I retired, I am currently a senior fellow with a wonderful organization known as CAPS, C-A-P-S. It stands for Californians for Population Stabilization, and you know that California has been hammered by its continuing failures of the state of California to address the many issues of illegal immigration that have plagued that state. And I'm talking, when I use the word plague, because I know some people may jump up and say, wait a moment, Mr. Cutler, aren't we a nation of immigrants? Well, in fact, we are. But the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. My own family has many members in that family who came here from other countries. My mother, who died when I was in college, came to America just ahead of the Holocaust. She was a tremendous inspiration for me, as was my dad, who was also the son of immigrants. My father was. So certainly I'm not against legal immigration, provided that that system has real integrity. And I'm here to tell you that there is almost no integrity to anything that deals with immigration today. It's not just the borders that aren't functioning. It's the entire immigration system that is broken. If you look at the immigration system as a chain, think about that famous saying that a chain is as strong as its weakest link. Where immigration is concerned, all that we seem to have are all but non-existent links and extremely weak links. And think about any experience you may have rowing a boat. If you're sitting in a boat in the middle of the lake with a bunch of holes in it, I don't care how many holes you plug, if you fail to plug even one of those holes, I guarantee you that that boat will wind up before too very long at the bottom of the lake. Immigration is a boat with many holes, and none of them are really being plugged. We're being told by Janet Napolitano, the head of an agency that I've come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender, we've heard her tell us, oh, the borders have never been more secure. And yet she will turn around in the next breath and tell us how some 230 American cities have been infested by the Mexican drug cartels. Well, I think that that's optimistic. I've seen information that the numbers are much higher. But even if it's quote-unquote only 230 cities, goodness gracious, what are we talking about? Think of the violence that they are witnessing in Mexico. Since Felipe Calderon, the current president of Mexico, took office just a few short years ago, close to 40,000 people have been slaughtered by the Mexican cartels. So to have Mexico sitting on our southern border with a level of violence that we're seeing in Mexico, and some of it literally flows across the border. Just last week, we had another episode of rounds, bullets fired in Mexico, winding up on an athletic field here in the United States at a school. A couple of months ago, there was a story about how bullets fired in Mexico hit the city hall of El Paso, Texas. I've been to El Paso. I was there about a year and a half ago. When I met with attorneys, I was retained as an expert witness in a criminal case, amazing case. Perhaps we'll get to it today, perhaps not. Likely we won't. But, you know, normally I don't help defense attorneys, but in this case I felt that immigration was wrong for prosecuting two guys for intentionally hiring illegal aliens, and I agreed to help the law firm and help those clients because I was convinced that after reviewing all the evidence that these guys had no intention of hiring illegal aliens. It was a badly done case. And, in fact, the jury ultimately acquitted these two guys. They'd been indicted on 15 or 16-count indictments each. But I was in a hotel that was just a couple of short miles from the Mexican border, and my hotel room on the upper floors of that hotel faced south, faced Mexico. And what was startling to me was that for that entire 7 or 8 days that I was in El Paso, every night just about, when I looked out of my windows of my hotel room, looked into Mexico, you could see lots of red lights at different places in Mexico. You knew these weren't car stops. There were far too many lights. Most likely what I was witnessing, I couldn't confirm it, but my hunch is that I was seeing murder scenes where all the police converged on this location because there was yet another body or bodies with an S. That's a level of violence that's unfathomable, and that's what we are facing right on our doorstep. And we have the Secretary of Homeland Surrender, Janet Napolitano, a woman who certainly should know better. She was a prosecutor. She was the governor of the state of Arizona. Ironically, a law that she enacted that gives the state of Arizona the authority to cancel or suspend business licenses for businesses that intentionally hire illegal aliens, the Supreme Court recently ruled that the states have that right. They absolutely have the right to go after business licenses of those companies that intentionally hire illegal aliens. So here's this woman who runs an agency, the biggest investigative agency of the federal government in terms of manpower, resources, and so forth, and says, well, the borders have never been more secure. Well, first of all, I don't buy that it's more secure than ever before, but my question is it secure enough? Well, here's the evidence, folks. 230-plus cities, by her estimation, many more by other people's estimation, are now infested by members of the Mexican cartels. And it's not just people from Mexico. We have criminal organizations from the four corners of the planet, whether it's the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican drug posses. The crazy stuff is that our country every year spends a ton of money on the war on terror, the war on drugs. We have law enforcement officers going in harm's way, getting killed. I've lost friends in law enforcement who I had the privilege of working with to conduct narcotics investigations. One of my closest friends in law enforcement was a guy by the name of Everett Hatcher. Hatch, as we called him, was a DEA agent. He was a military veteran. He was a tremendous human being, a tremendous friend, a great agent, a father of two, a husband. He was gunned down doing a narcotics investigation into organized crime, mobsters selling drugs. Now, the people that he was killed by were, in fact, U.S. citizens. But I assure you that the narcotics that were being peddled came across our border. Now, his murder happened over 20 years ago. So this war on drugs has been ongoing for decades. And by the way, you'll never see anything on TV, or almost never see anything on TV, about why we've got to stop our addiction problem here in the United States. It seems as though the food police is out in force. We hear lots about how our children are addicted to sweets, how our kids are using too much salt on their French fries. But I can't think of the last time I saw a concerted effort to warn people about the dangers of using cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, marijuana. You know, we never hear about that. What we do hear about is cigarettes, which I agree with. My dad died of lung cancer. I don't like cigarettes. But we hear nothing about narcotics, but we do hear about salt and sugar. This is nuts. And meanwhile, our country's borders are wide open. And yesterday, as if to punctuate the lack of denial, the blinders that most of our supposed leaders are wearing, I watched the presidential debate in Iowa, and it's amazing. There's a gentleman by the name of Huntsman who made the point that we have to first secure the borders and then we can deal with the people who are here. Boy, we keep hearing this. First, we're going to secure the borders. And what Huntsman said was, we're going to reach out to the governors of the four border states. And I presume he means California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And again, there's California, and I keep thinking about Californians for population stabilization. They are a case study of what happens when borders are not secured and rampant illegal immigration takes hold. That state is bankrupt. I'm happy to work with those folks. I appreciate the good work that they do. But it's not just California, and it's not just four border states. What we keep forgetting is that we have a huge border with Canada. Yes, the situation is very different. I had the privilege of working with members of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They are among the best law enforcement officers I've ever had the privilege of working with from any country. But the point is, we do have a border, and we do have illegal aliens coming from Canada. And they do have terrorist organizations in Canada, and we have terrorists operating in our country right now, raising money, and God knows what they might be preparing to do. And certainly we have to be mindful that we are now less than 1 month away from the 10th anniversary of that god-awful terrorist attack of September 11th, 2001. But, you know, the terrorists who attacked us did not run our borders, although we have intercepted terrorists seeking to run our borders. The borders who attacked our nation on 9/11, all 19 of them came through ports of entry. You can't secure the immigration system by talking to the governors of four out of 50 states and say, well, now we've addressed the problem. No, we have not. It's not simply about the Mexican border. You know, if you could make the Mexican border completely impermeable, you still wouldn't solve the problem. Do you know that from 2005 until 2010, according to a recent GAO report, we had 98 million plus non-immigrant aliens lawfully admitted into our country under the auspices of the visa waiver program? Over 98 million. And by the way, where did the GAO get the statistics from? They apparently didn't get it from DHS. You would think that the agency that oversees the admission of aliens into our country would have the numbers. The report, as I recall, relied on the Pew Hispanic Center to tell them how many people had been admitted under the visa waiver program, and over 30 million had come in with actual visas. So it's roughly a 3-to-1 ratio. Three times as many aliens enter our country every year without visas under the visa waiver program. 36 countries now participate in that program as compared with the number of aliens who came here who had visas. So we're talking about roughly a third of our population, or nearly a third of our population, entering our country in a 5-year period on temporary visas. That's a lot of people coming into the country. And when aliens who enter the United States legally under the visa waiver program or with visas, and now we're talking about 130 million people, roughly, guess how many people are assigned at immigration to hunt down those aliens who fail to depart in a timely fashion? And you know, the government will tell you there's about 5 or 6 million or 4.5 million. They have all kinds of numbers. And I've heard from people inside DHS who are still in place telling me that there might be 10 million people who have overstayed their visas or otherwise violated the terms of their admission. And these folks are here illegally. Make no mistake about it. They violated our laws and they continue to stay here. And there's millions of them. And if you read the GAO reports, folks, there are fewer than 300 agents, or the equivalent of 300 agents in terms of how man hours or agent hours, I don't want to be sexist about this, agent hours are allocated. 3% of the resources of ICE are allocated to going after millions of visa violators. So we have about, let's say 300, we'll be optimistic, and I know it's not that high, it's 200 and something, 300 agents trying to track down anywhere from 4.5 to 10 million illegal aliens. You know, that's like going to the beach with a teaspoon and being told, take this teaspoon, go to the beach, and get rid of all the sand. Oh, and by the way, when high tide comes in, it's going to bring in even more sand than you removed the day before. That's where we are today. This is what now passes for immigration law enforcement. This is what now passes for national security. So yesterday, what I was struck by was the fact that I watched this debate, and immigration was a separate question. We're going to ask a question about immigration. Really? Well, before they got to the question about immigration, they talked about the unemployment rate. They talked about the economy. They talked about national security after that discussion about the immigration question. And by the way, a number of the participants didn't even get to answer a question about immigration. Well, if you stop and give this some rational thought, are we really talking about immigration separately, or is immigration part of our unemployment problem? If you have 8 million or 10 million or 15 or 20 million, I mean, the numbers are crazy. No one knows. We have no idea who's here. And I can assure you about one thing where Washington and statistics are concerned. Figures don't lie, but liars can figure. Because my best guess is that we have well over 30 million illegal aliens present in our country today. And many of them are working. Well, if they're working and Americans are not working, what is wrong with this picture? How can you talk honestly about an unemployment problem and not consider immigration a component of that particular problem? How do you talk about negative cash flow and not address the fact that the aliens who are in our country, whether they're here legally or illegally, but they're working, send between $100 to $200 billion per year out of our economy? $200 billion. Now, I know that we're talking about trillions of dollars, and you say, well, it's only 200, right, if that's the number? But consider this. When an American or a resident alien earns a paycheck, he or she is either going to put it in a bank, maybe invest it in a company, buy some stock. That person is likely going to make purchases, buy a new refrigerator, a new suit, a new car. People who are here whose families are back home send the money back to their families. Now, I don't blame them for doing this. See, I don't vilify the people that come and work in the United States, especially if they're here on temporary visas and they're you know, meeting what we say are the requirements of law. They're doing what we would all do. They send money back to their families. Shame on our government, but even more importantly, folks, shame on us for allowing our politicians to get away with this lunacy because they are beholden to the fat cats who make the campaign contributions, who want all of those foreign workers here in the United States, because their goal is to pay the least amount of money possible for wages, to minimize the amount of money they have to spend on fringe benefits. Alan Greenspan, and I know I keep hammering on Greenspan, but I'll be honest, I can't stand this character. He infuriates me. He's the enemy of the middle class. And I have to tell you, folks, if you're the enemy of the middle class, then you're the enemy of our people. Because America wasn't only built by immigrants. I want you to think about it. America was built by an upwardly mobile middle class. That's the whole idea to what made America, America. What gave people the incentive to get up in the morning with a fire in their belly and do amazing things was the idea that they would be able, at the end of the day, to succeed, to build a business, to do all kinds of worthwhile things to amass their money and do what they had to do. And so that's really what the issue is, that these folks had to be able to get up in the morning and do what they needed to do to be successful. That's the American dream, is it not? The American dream is about building a business and being successful. Think of the expression that we used to use. If you build a better mousetrap, the world will be the pathway to your door. Well, what did that mean? Well, if you had creativity, if you had imagination, a little bit of gumption, maybe a little good old-fashioned luck, if you had a strategy in place and you could build a better profit, maybe do it for a couple bucks less, you could be the next success story. You know, we think about Steve Jobs and Apple. We think about Microsoft, these businesses that were the upstarts. But their business people that put those companies together made a ton of money. Henry Ford, you know, we can go right down the list. Today, we don't even use that expression, build a mouse, the better mousetrap. Probably today, if you had a mouse in your house, you wouldn't be thinking about building a better mousetrap. You try to figure out who you're supposed to sue. I mean, this is crazy stuff, folks. We're going to sue somebody, and that's how we're going to be successful. America has been the country of the lawsuit. Instead of saying build a better mousetrap, they tell you you got to be in it to win it. Well, what are they talking about? Get a good lottery ticket. Get a winning lottery ticket. You could be the next success story. How can getting a lottery ticket build America? We've gotten away from the idea of empowering the individual to be that next success story. And Alan Greenspan is out there talking about how we've made a privileged elite out of Americans who have the skills and education and saying, well, the people that have education in America are making too much money. They're part of what he now calls the privileged elite. Privileged elite, my goodness gracious. Mitt Romney was saying, well, we've got to put Americans to work, and I like that. I agree with Mitt. But then he said something that absolutely, I have to tell you, drives me straight up the wall. What Mitt Romney said was, you have got to tack on a green card to the advanced degrees so that if somebody gets a PhD, we should give them a green card. What sense does that make to give somebody a green card who, you know, gets a PhD in the United States? Why aren't we looking to provide more opportunities for American kids to get those PhDs? Because if we keep on educating foreign workers and we keep on ignoring American kids, and I'm talking about American kids who are black, American kids who are Latinos, American kids who are white, American kids who are of Asian ancestry. I don't care what flavor. We're talking about American children, and we have seen them now as a disposable commodity. Who cares about them? We'll import people, because after all, if we don't bring in the best and brightest from elsewhere, America's going to fail. I mean, could the politicians be more insulting of the citizens of our country? If you educate American kids rather than become a drain on our economy, those kids will be the next leaders. Those kids will get their share of the American dream and take America along with it for that rocket-like ride into success. And we don't even have a rocket to get to the space station today, the International Space Station. You want to go, you got to hitch a ride with the Russians and pretty soon perhaps the Chinese, maybe the Indians. But we don't have a means of getting to the space station that we built. We don't have a means of ever again repairing the Hubble telescope that we orbited. But don't worry. Mitt Romney and all these other folks apparently want to bring in foreign students and give them PhDs so they can be successful. First and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, a country needs to look out for the best interests of its own citizens. What a remarkable idea that would be. You have got to look out for the best interests of your citizens? Wow, what a novel thought. Wasn't that the idea behind the American dream, that we would provide a first-rate education to our kids and that our kids would grow up to be the next generation of engineers and doctors and technicians and scientists and biochemists? That's what made America America, and now we're being told, wait a minute, if America's going to be successful, we better get our act together and we better go send foreign students to the United States so that they can ultimately build our country. What nonsense is that about? I don't understand what in blazes these folks are thinking about. We really and truly have got to get our act together, folks, because the direction that we're going off in right now is madness. We're watching our own country dissolve slowly because we're not taking care of our own children, but we're being told that the key to success is to go and bring in foreign workers. Does this make any sense? I don't think so. It's just one of those things that you look at, and nobody seems to be following the point. And so here I am marveling at this debate, so called, and you say to yourself, what in blazes are we doing? Why in goodness gracious, why are we not taking care of what we need to do? And what we need to do is look at our unemployment rate. Look at how many kids we are not graduating from the schools. Look at what we're not doing to help Americans to succeed. This idea that we're simply going to get corporations to be more profitable and ignore the plight of Americans whose houses are being lost to foreclosure is lunacy. It's a betrayal of the citizens of our country. But yet, when they had the debate yesterday, there was no linkage between, hey, you know what? We have a high unemployment rate and millions of people who are working and shouldn't even be in our country. No one was looking at the remittances. Not a word was said about remittances. And then what was even more remarkable, or just as remarkable, Newt Gingrich, who is certainly an experienced politician. Remember, Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House. And what did he say? He says, well, you know, what we really need to do is to secure the borders, but, you know, if people have been here for a long time, then we need to take care of them. Well, I don't agree with that at all. But again, there's this denial of reality. This was Gingrich's statement. And then in the very next sentence, he talked about the need for a loyalty oath to be given to federal workers because, you know, we have people working for the federal government and they may not be trustworthy and they may lie about why they're here and what they're doing and what their intentions are. And again, the disconnect. And I wanted to scream into the television and say, Newt, what in blazes are you saying? Why don't you see this? You see, if people who work for the government might be lying, may have nefarious intentions, then why can't he understand that people will lie about how long they've been in the United States? As an agent, I did a lot of field investigations. When you're dealing with a foreign national, an alien, who has multiple false identities, who lies about where he's lived and where he's worked and who he is, how do you begin to know how long that person is here? Now, there's lots of reasons why I think that it's wrong to give blanket amnesty to millions of people whose true identities are unknown and unknowable, and it starts with the idea that you get one opportunity for a first impression. So the first impression people around the world now have of the United States is our borders mean nothing. Our laws mean nothing. They are impediments. They are impediments to the goals of the people with extreme wealth. So you can do whatever you want, but as long as you get here, walk, crawl, fly, cheat, swindle, if you can come here, our politicians want to give you citizenship. Citizenship, the most incredible honor a country can bestow upon a foreign national. Citizenship. And that's what we want to give you. Run our border, lie about your identity, do all these other things, but that's cool. We want to make you a citizen. But meanwhile, we don't know who you are, and we don't know how long you've been here. And Newt Gingrich can't be that dumb. He's a bright guy. He's been around forever. But he makes these ridiculous statements. We need to have a loyalty oath for government employees to make sure they're on the level. But somehow, illegal aliens who have lied about who they are, who ran our borders, who evaded the inspections process that is supposed to keep bad guys and criminals and terrorists and spies out of our country, not a big deal. We'll take care of you. We'll give you a pathway to citizenship because, after all, you're just undocumented immigrants. All that you're missing is the document. And we'll give you the document. We don't know what name to put on the document, but that's cool. But if you work for the government, Newt Gingrich says, you know what? We need to give you a loyalty oath. You know, recently I've been working with a wonderful group. It's a Tea Party Immigration Coalition. John Stahl is the founder, along with Diana Rama. And they've been doing a dynamite job of putting this group together. I speak with them regularly. And, you know, we are so concerned that the immigration component in the debate has been lost. Now, this was the first of many to come. I know there'll be other debates. I really think that at least one debate should really have as its focus not the economy, but immigration. Because immigration really isn't a single issue, folks. Immigration is the major factor in virtually every challenge and every threat that confronts the United States of America today. That's what immigration is. If you're laying off Americans or not providing jobs for Americans because you're hiring illegal aliens, that's a problem. It adds to the unemployment rate. If you're educating foreign students and ignoring American kids, that's a problem. Because if you really have kids who are very motivated to excel, who don't want to live in poverty, I mean, who wakes up and says, wow, it's great to be poor? But if there is no legitimate pathway for the talents and for that urge for success that's so inherent in most of us, what you sometimes find is that kids who live in poverty will revert to crime in order to become successful. And I have to tell you that I've been part of investigations into drug trafficking organizations where the leaders of those organizations had incredible skills that, if they were properly channeled and harnessed, could have been amazing success stories in the auto industry, the airline industry, manufacturing space. God knows what these kids could have done. But they did not have access to the education that they needed, and they wound up getting involved in criminal activities. Now, I'm not giving them excuses. I don't give anybody a pass for becoming a drug dealer. I don't give anybody a pass for sticking somebody up. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying for a moment. But we have to look at reality. We have to understand the disease of poverty and the disease of failure, and we have to look at what we're not doing to change the way things are. We have generations of Americans who have been living on welfare. If we don't break that cycle, we will bankrupt America. Look at how much of the money that we spend every year on these so-called entitlement programs, because you have generations of people who unfortunately are on welfare and getting public assistance. And they're not living a great life, let me tell you, but they don't perhaps realize what is possible. If we can create success stories among the poor, provide opportunities among the poor, maybe we could take a great stride forward to breaking the cycle. But we're not going to do that if we keep looking to other countries to send us their bright kids and ignore our own bright kids. This is nutty. It flies in the face of reason. But yet, you know what? We hear this all the time. And then, of course, we got to the point where during this debate yesterday, they started to talk about national security. I wrote a commentary for CAPS. And by the way, the CAPS website, and I'd wish you would go visit their website, and I'd love for you to visit my website. CAPSweb.org is the website for Californians for Population Stabilization. C-A-P-S, CAPSweb, C-A-P-S-W-E-B.org. Or you can go to my website, michaelcutler.net. And I suspect if you're on the, listening to me on the radio today, you've been to my website, michaelcutler.net. But I recently wrote a commentary where I raised a very serious question. And I really mean this. Why in blazes do we still need a military? Before you think I've lost my mind, I want you to stop and give some thought to something. We spend billions, I mean mega billions, on aircraft carriers, nuclear submarines, missile systems, the infantry, the Air Force. You name the service. You look at how many kids we have out there. How many of them are in harm's way protecting our country? And they're doing incredible work. I don't want anyone misunderstanding what I'm talking about. I am in awe of our men and women in the military. Our country owes our soldiers, no matter what branch of service they're in, they're all soldiers, whether they're in the Coast Guard, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, the Army. They are our soldiers. They are the boots on the ground. They are the ones who go in harm's way on our behalf. We can't ever repay them for their gallantry, for their sacrifices, for the ways that so many times we send a young kid overseas and they lose their innocence and their youth almost overnight. If they're lucky, they come back in one piece, but I think they always carry with them the scars of what they've witnessed and experienced, and some are not so lucky. They come back injured physically, emotionally, or both, and tragically, as we saw just about a week ago, sometimes they don't come back at all. But why are we sending them overseas to fight these wars when right now our borders are so wide open that it's entirely likely that people who want to blow us up are right now somewhere within the United States of America, just as happened before the attacks of 2001, just as happened before the first attack on the World Trade Center back in February of 1993. And when I wrote that article for CAPS, and it's on my website as well, I cited the incident where 10 Germans were found in the United States who had been here before. Some of them had been here before, and they went back to the fatherland, you know, to Germany during the Second World War, because they were Nazis, and they wanted to do us in. They wanted to go after our ability to crank out industrial supplies, military supplies, for our allies in Europe. And they thought that they would come here and blow up some of our factories or somehow sabotage our war effort. And the FBI, working with the Coast Guard, a Coast Guardsman spotted a couple of these guys out on Long Island. A couple of other guys were caught in Florida. 8 of the 10 were ultimately executed, and 2 of them got lengthy jail sentences. One guy wound up in jail for 30 years, and the other guy got a life sentence because they were here to do us in. It's not unlike what we're seeing with these people that go back to the Middle East after we admit them here, and they go to training camps, whether it's in Somalia or elsewhere. But the difference is that we are now in a situation where we're ignoring the fact that you cannot protect our country until and unless you secure our borders to prevent people from coming here who would want to do harm to us. That's the point. How in blazes do you protect the country when you have millions of people who live among us using false identity documents, claiming to be somebody that they're not, where we don't even know their nationality, let alone their true name? You know, we've naturalized people who have turned out to be spies. We've naturalized people who got involved in immigration fraud and got jobs at the FBI and CIA and elsewhere, because we do a sloppy job. This romantic notion that everybody who runs the border simply wants to mow our lawns or be treated terribly by us is crazy. And then, of course, we hear the nonsense from the open borders advocates, people I've come to refer to as the immigration anarchists, who tell us, well, you just don't like immigrants. My goodness gracious, as an immigration agent, I have seen the horrific conditions under which so many illegal aliens are forced to work. There was a report not long ago that I did a commentary on about how in America you have illegal aliens working in the tomato fields where if they're lucky they get to take a cold shower, where they're sleeping in the back of trucks, pickup trucks, where they're defecating in the fields. If you wonder why we sometimes see outbreaks of E. coli and other foodborne illnesses, look at the way we treat people on the farms. Look at the lack of sanitation, the inhumanity. And if you don't think we're making enemies along the way, just because somebody isn't educated doesn't mean they're stupid. People who are being exploited know damn well they're being exploited, but they tolerate it because they are desperate. And we all know that desperate people will do desperate things. To say that you're anti-immigrant because you don't want to see people brought here to be exploited, if that's anti-immigrant, then you might say that somebody who doesn't like slavery doesn't like black people, which is nuts. It makes absolutely no sense, but no one has the guts to confront people who spew this venomous nonsense. As Americans, we need to grow a spine, and we need to go up to those people who make those ridiculous allegations and get in their face and say you're a liar. No one has the guts to call anybody out anymore. We've gotten so polite, we're going to be polited to death. As Americans, we have always been willing to stand up for what we believed in. Where is our spine today? Where is our moral fiber that gives us the confidence to stand up and disagree, you know, peaceably, go back to the Constitution, the First Amendment, but very clearly and in an unmistakable voice and say to people, how am I anti-immigrant if I am disgusted by the idea that we would allow desperate people to come into our country, violate our laws, run the risk of dying in the process, and then if they're successful, quote unquote, they will be exploited, probably worse than slaves in some cases. There is nothing humanitarian about treating people like garbage. If you treated a dog the way some of these farm workers are treated, according to not only this article, but other articles I've read and circumstances I've seen firsthand as an agent, if you think that's acceptable, God help all of us. America should be doing much better than that. When Alan Greenspan can talk about the privileged elite and not be referring to some corporate executive who makes $100 million a year and when he screws his company into the ground walks out the door with a golden parachute, but when some poor schmo who works at that company, through no fault of his own, when that company goes belly up or they have a serious economic shortfall because there was a crook running the company and he loses his job and he gets escorted to his desk by an armed security guard who makes certain he doesn't even take a stapler home or a pen home with the company logo on it, God forbid, and Greenspan has the guts to refer to Americans, hardworking Americans, as the privileged elite because they have a skill or education, and Americans didn't descend on Washington with pitchforks and torches demanding that this guy be put in a jail for the nonsense he's done to this country? At some point, there has to be accountability. And there has been no accountability. Business as usual in Washington has gotten so bizarre, so wacky, that sometimes I am convinced that Rod Serling is writing the headlines in the newspapers. Americans are so caught up in who's winning Dancing with the Stars, who's going to win the pennant, who's going to win the Super Bowl, who's going to win this, who cares? I'll be honest with you, folks. If you're on the Titanic and the damn boat is about to go under, that's not the time to be discussing whether or not your necktie matches your jacket. That's the time to get in a lifeboat. If we can't secure our nation's borders, if we can't create an immigration system that has real integrity and that also, by the way, honors the countless millions of lawful immigrants and their descendants who built this magnificent nation, by making citizenship the incredibly valuable commodity that it used to be. I mean, we've so cheapened it, it reminds me of the Groucho Marx line that he wouldn't want to belong to an organization that would have him as a member. Well, that's what citizenship has become. When you could live in a state of New York, as I do, where you can get a learner's permit in 10, 12, I don't know how many names at this point, and drive a car, even though you can't read a single road sign, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with a country that's so embarrassed to be itself that college universities very often take flags off the campus because they might offend a foreign student. I got a news bulletin for you guys, if that's how you think. This is America. Our flag is the flag. When I've been to Canada and I saw the maple leaf, I assure you I was not offended. I was in Canada. What was I supposed to see hanging on flagpoles? Dirty laundry? I mean, you go to another country, you expect to see their flag. I've been to France. Guess what? The tricolor is there, right? The tricolor. The French flag is there. Belgium, you see their flag. Wherever I've been, you see the flag of the country. But in America, oh boy, we better not have that flag hanging. We might offend somebody. If I offend anybody by what I'm saying, I'm glad. Because maybe by offending somebody, I'm creating some thought, some debate, some discussion. Because that's what's been lacking. We have been cowed by people who make accusations that are baseless, and no one calls them out. And I, frankly, don't understand it, ladies and gentlemen. I don't understand how we could become so cowardly, so spineless. We need to stand up for what we believe in. I'm not talking about having any physical confrontation. I was a law enforcement officer to protect people from violence. I don't like violence of any kind. But we do need to stand up and hold our ground. And this idea about not wanting to upset anyone or offend anyone, well, I'm offended, and I'm sure you're offended, and it's time that we stood our ground and told the politicians off. And whether you agreed with Gingrich's position or not, it was certainly refreshing to see Newt Gingrich get in the face of the reporters when he was angry. And I'm not a big Newt Gingrich fan. But there comes a time when enough is enough. And you know, I have heard these arguments all along. Well, if you want secure borders, you're a xenophobe, you're anti-immigrant. Really? I heard this when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Arlen Specter, who thankfully, it pleases me no end, is no longer a member of that supposed august body, goodness gracious. But he basically accused me of xenophobia, but of course because he's brain damaged, he referred to it as exophobia and then corrected himself. This is what passes for leadership in the U.S. Senate. Exophobia, xenophobia, because I'm of the belief that we have to secure our borders. Are you antisocial if you lock your door at night before you go to sleep, or maybe during the day as well? Does that make you antisocial if you look through the peephole before you will open the door to a stranger, or does it just make you sensible? The immigration laws, let me be clear about this, are completely and utterly blind as to race, religion, ethnicity, gender. It's purely about the distinction of citizen versus non-citizen. And I don't like to spew law, but if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, and you go to my website, you can see my commentaries. I speak about this law frequently. That section of law categorizes all of the reasons why an alien should be kept out of the United States. It starts off with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, or perhaps sexual deviation, for example, pedophiles, human rights violators, human traffickers, drug smugglers, convicted felons, fugitives from justice, spies, terrorists, money launderers, pimps, prostitutes. Folks, are these the people we should be admitting into the United States? Do we not have enough drug traffickers? Do we not have enough violent thugs? The point to the immigration law is to keep people out of our country, foreign nationals whose presence is harmful. Period. There is not a word in those laws that talk about ethnicity. From a very personal perspective, my family was decimated during the Holocaust. Decimated. Many of my friends' parents suffered greatly during the Holocaust. Do you honestly believe, with my background, that I could have enforced immigration laws for 30 years if I thought that those laws were based on bigotry, racism, or whatever? I have a confession, you know. As a law enforcement officer, if I get angry enough, I think my kids may have heard the F word on more than one occasion because I don't believe in smacking a kid, but when the child who's old enough says something that or does something that really goes beyond the pale, they might hear me say, "What the are you doing?" That word is not nearly as repugnant to me personally as the N-word or any version thereof. There is no place in my lexicon for the N-word or any other word that discriminates against any human being of any race, religion, or ethnicity. Those are the real hurtful words, not words that deal with bodily parts or body functions. The dirty words are the words that discriminate against fellow human beings, because at the end of the day, that's what we are. We're all human beings. And no one asked to be born black or white or Latino or Jewish or Catholic or Protestant or even Muslim. That's the luck of the draw where we land. You know, the immigration laws are completely blind about all of those factors and only make one distinction between citizens and non-citizens. So it's insane that we keep hearing this nonsense, the lies that, oh, if you want the border secure, you're evil because you're a bigot. Am I a bigot because I don't want a pedophile admitted into our country who might rape a child? Am I a bigot if I believe that someone who's been deported should be allowed to stay, should not be allowed to come back into our country unless they get lawful authority from our government? Am I a bigot if I don't want terrorists to enter our country? Am I a bigot if I don't want drug traffickers or gang members to come into our country to commit crimes of violence? And by the way, just for the record, just so you know, the most likely victim of violence perpetrated by ethnic organized crime groups, and not just within the Latino community, go to any community you want, the Russian community, the Asian community, the Caribbean community. The most likely victims are the members of the same ethnicity, and generally it's the immigrants. So how in blazes is an anti-immigrant to say, I want the border secured. I want to make sure we don't let people come to America who by coming here would do harm to us. And the problem is that no one stands up and says anything, or very few people stand up and say anything. So it emboldens these liars. And we look like a bunch of idiots. And we're paying a price for our foolishness and our cowardice. Because in my world, if you don't have the guts to stand up for what you believe in, you are a coward. Cowardice is not the pathway to success. It's the pathway to oblivion. I'm not even a conservative, by the way. For my whole life, I've been registered as a Democrat. I'm a labor guy. My father was a construction worker. We are undermining the average American who's simply trying to feed himself or his or her family, raise his or her children, support themselves. Because we don't have the guts to stand up to the politicians who are taking money with both hands and brag about it. As a federal officer, I was not allowed to accept as much as a cup of coffee from anybody. If I did, I'd be in a world of trouble, and rightfully so, because the idea is that if you take something from somebody, there is now an expectation you will have to give something in return. You see? So we were told that if you went to someone's house, for example, because their neighbor was the subject of an investigation, if you went to that person, knocked on their door and said, Mr. Jones, my name is Mike Cutler, I'm an INS agent, and I'm interested in the guy that lives three doors down from you. Can you tell me what you know? If that person said, Mr. Cutler, you know, we're having dinner, why don't you sit down with us and have a cup of coffee? The response we were supposed to give, and the response I always gave, and my partners always gave, was, I appreciate the offer of coffee, but I'll settle for a glass of ice water. Now, why was it ice water? Because this way, no one could say we gave Mike Cutler something. So now we need a personal favor we can call him. And I guarantee you, the personal favor had something to do with helping a relative who is probably illegally present in the United States. And now you're in an uncomfortable position. Well, I had a cup of coffee with these people. They were very nice to me. And no, you don't do that. What you say to the person is, no, I'm sorry. That's something I can't help you with. But it's far easier to say no to somebody you've never taken anything from. And you look at how many politicians are out there, panhandling, if you will, begging and pleading, I need money. I want you folks to think about it. How many emails have you gotten in the last year from some political party or some candidate saying, please send me money? Think about the madness here. Now, yes, if we write that check for $25, we don't expect anything. But when someone starts writing checks for thousands of dollars, don't you think there's an expectation that that money is going to buy something, whether it's access or whether it's the ability to persuade that person that if you want more money, this is a particular bill that I'm interested in? You see, this is a very slippery slope. And we're sliding right off the edge with this nonsense. If you look at how much money is poured into political campaigns, and if you look at the so-called hardball questions, you know, Newt was right. They played the game of gotcha yesterday. They played the game of gotcha, you know. And, you know, maybe there was some validity to the question, why did your people leave? And, you know, but Newt went on the offensive, and that's fine. Politicians should be able to attack their attackers, I guess. It makes for entertaining television, if nothing else. But the bottom line is that we have got to change the way we do business. And it's not going to happen with the same old crop of politicians and reporters, because not a single reporter and not a single politician really got the issue right. The only person that sort of got to it was Kane, the businessman who had run Godfather Pizza, because he had these 4 points, and I liked those 4 points. He said that first we should secure the border. Well, I'd love to sit down with him and get him to understand that the border doesn't only exist along the north and south borders of the United States. It's also the fact that we have 95,000 miles of coastal region. Believe it or not, that many miles when you look at all the inlets and stuff. And we've got those international airports. But, okay, secure the border, I agree. Enforce the immigration laws about the employers, I agree with that. He said we've got a pathway to citizenship right now. It's called legal immigration. I couldn't agree with him more. I wanted to stand up and cheer because he got that right. And then finally, he hit on an issue that's very important. He talked about how it's a matter of states' rights to enforce the immigration laws. And he's right. Lamar Smith is a gentleman who I've known for perhaps 16, 17 years. I've known him a very long time. I've had the privilege to testify at his behest at a number of congressional hearings, most recently this past January. If ever there has been a rock-solid leader on the immigration issue, it has been Lamar Smith. It was Lamar Smith who invited me to my very first hearing in Washington back in May of 1997 on the issue of visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. And this was over 4 years after the two terrorist attacks that took place in America back in 1993. First, we had a guy by the name of Amil Khansi, a Pakistani national who got political asylum even though he committed fraud. And he repaid our generosity by standing outside the CIA in January 1993 with an AK-47. He opened fire, killed two CIA officers, and wounded three others and fled the country. Our people hunted him down, brought him back, put him on trial, convicted him. And he was ultimately executed. Of course, the people he killed remained dead. The people that he wounded remained injured. The people who lost family members were still without their family members, and the CIA lost some wonderful people. A month after the attack at the CIA, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. So it took us till, because the Democrats were in office, and I'm being very honest with you folks, the Clinton administration utterly ignored those two terrorist attacks. If Bill Clinton and Al Gore, who concocted Citizenship USA, and there's been Inspector General reports and GAO reports about this fiasco, if they had been more focused on looking at how the terrorists entered our country and embedded themselves in our country that committed that attack at the CIA and then again at the World Trade Center just a month later, that left six dead, hundreds if not thousands injured, and $500 million in damage to that iconic part of the southern, of the lower Manhattan skyline. And in fact, one of the towers almost came down sideways. If we had paid attention, or if they had paid attention, 9/11 could not have happened. They ignored it and rushed over a million people through the naturalization process. Keep that machinery moving fast, you know. Crank out those new voters, new citizens. I'm sorry, what did I just say? Look, this is nonsense. There's no integrity to the process. But it took Lamar Smith and Henry Hyde in those days, the late Henry Hyde, who was at the time chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, to convene a hearing about visa fraud and benefit fraud. And I was honored to have been invited to be a participant in that hearing. And he's always had an open door for me. And he's a very special leader in my world. But I think Lamar Smith is wrong today on H.R. 2164. And one thing that I've always promised myself, before I've promised anybody else, it's what I've made a deal with myself. And the deal I made with myself was I would always call him the way I see him. And I think that the idea of a mandatory E-Verify program is vital. I think Lamar Smith is right on the money saying we need E-Verify. However, under his bill, the states could not enforce the immigration laws by themselves. And that's wherein lies the problem. That's wherein lies the problem. And we have got to allow the states to enforce their own immigration laws. And that was something that Mr. Cain got right yesterday during the debate. Of course, he then said we have to build tall fences and have wide open doors, and I'm not sure where he wants to go with that. So, but of all the people who spoke yesterday, I would say that Mr. Cain came closest to getting it exactly right. But nobody else really seems to get it. We're being told about how we have to tack on the green card to advanced degrees, how we have to talk to the governors of just 4 out of 50 states. Look, if we can't get our borders under control and secured, if we continue to give out citizenship to people who shouldn't be getting it, if we do nothing to go after people who violate our immigration laws, and if you look at the current administration and how John Morton, the head of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has issued a memo detailing all the various reasons why prosecutorial discretion should be used to not arrest illegal aliens who are illegally present at our country, then we've got a serious problem. And when you look at how they're talking now about the Secure Communities program and how states are up in arms, certain states, like the idiot who runs New York State, Governor Cuomo, who says, well, they're going after aliens who aren't committed guilty of serious crimes. So in other words, if someone runs the border, that's not a problem. If someone sneaks into your house, that's not a problem. You know, you want to get a hold of someone like Andrew Cuomo and say to him, Mr. Governor, if this evening when you went to bed and you woke up or you couldn't fall asleep and it's 1 o'clock in the morning and you say, you know what, I could go for maybe a cup of herbal tea or some warm milk or whatever it is that you like to drink when you can't sleep at night. Could you imagine? You say to the governor, what would happen if you went downstairs to fix yourself a little midnight snack, and on your way to the kitchen, governor, you saw about a dozen people milling about in your living room, and you don't know who they are. You've never seen them before. You certainly didn't invite them in. You're not even sure how they got there, but they're hanging out in your living room, and they're sipping water, and they're talking. Maybe the TV is on, and it's not on too loudly, though, so they're being respectful of you. But there they are in your house. Would you be a little bit concerned that people you didn't invite in are suddenly inside your house? Or would you just say, well, it's raining out, I guess they didn't want to get wet, so you pour yourself a cup of tea and you go back upstairs and you leave them alone in your living room? Could you imagine anybody reacting that way? See, the point is that the immigration laws of our country were designed for one primary purpose, to protect us. If you ignore those laws, how can you protect our country? How do you prevent people from coming here who want to do harm to us? And today, the mere fact that people are taking jobs that Americans desperately need to support themselves is enough of a problem. But on top of it, we're dealing with criminals and terrorists and gang members and a whole bunch of different folks whose real intentions are unknown and unknowable. If somebody does not submit to the inspections process, I don't care what the nonsense excuse is, they are in violation of our laws, and they need to be dealt with effectively. We need to discourage this kind of activity. you know, when we drive our cars, if we speed, even if we're in a car that could certainly handle the speed and the road is dry and there's no one on the highway and you get pulled over by a cop, they're probably going to give you a ticket, that police officer. Not because you're even necessarily doing anything dangerous, but there's an established speed limit, and we want people to know that if you violate the established rules of the road, you're going to pay a consequence. What people like Cuomo and Obama and any politician who talks about an amnesty program for millions of illegal aliens is really saying to people is that our immigration laws are not really important. They're not serious. They're not serious. And we're not serious about the laws of the United States. So from day one, the lesson is clear. If you come to America, if you violate our borders, if you violate our laws, our alleged leaders are eager to reward you for it. That's a dangerous first lesson. And you know, the other thing that I'd love to ask these politicians is, why don't we save a lot of money, since the immigration laws apparently aren't really of importance anyway, and why don't we just shut down all the inspection facilities at international airports across the country? Could you imagine how much money we could save and how much easier we could make travel if you got off of an airplane from Jamaica or from Beijing or from Tokyo or from Rio de Janeiro or from London or Paris or any other country, Moscow, and say to people, okay, just get your suitcase and go wherever it is you wanted to go, because we really don't care about our immigration laws. Why in blazes are we involved with inspecting passengers and luggage if we don't care what comes across our borders? We could save a ton of money, couldn't we? And you can't tell me that it's not okay to run the border one way, but okay to run the border another way. There's got to be sanity to what we're doing, ladies and gentlemen. And so time and again, we see the same foolishness. And if you have a politician who talks about amnesty for illegal aliens, that is a politician who must not be elected. It's a betrayal of our law, but more importantly, it's a betrayal of our citizens, and it's a threat to our safety and our well-being. And I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, an independent, or a member of the Tea Party. The immigration laws, as the most fundamental, basic rule, are there to protect us. And if you have an alleged leader who tells you that that level of protection is unimportant, then you have somebody who certainly is not worthy of your vote. And I don't care what party they're from. I don't care if you like what they say about any other issue. The most vital issue today, given the war on drugs and the war on terror and the economic crisis, are our immigration laws. If we keep bringing in foreign students who undermine American students and American workers, if we keep on allowing illegal aliens to come into our country, and if we keep on bringing more foreign temporary so-called workers for the high-tech industries, we will continue to unemploy Americans. We will continue to witness the outflow of massive quantities of American dollars. We will continue to incentivize people to violate our laws, and not just our immigration laws, but all of our laws. Because you only get one opportunity for that first impression. And for millions of people around the world, that first impression comes from the way that we fail to secure our borders and we fail to enforce our immigration laws, and our alleged leaders promise citizenship to anybody who is willing to run the border. Any politician who thinks that this is acceptable must not win election or re-election. That's the litmus test, because immigration is not the single issue that the correspondents would have had you believe it is yesterday. Immigration is a major factor in every threat, every challenge that confronts America today. And I urge all of you, to please get involved. You know, when I write commentaries, I like to end my commentaries by reminding people that democracy is not a spectator sport. And it really isn't. The politicians work for us. We hire them, we fire them. That's what Election Day is about. They're supposed to work for us. If you worked for a boss and your boss told you, I expect you to wear a necktie at work, and you came in without a tie and you wore blue jeans, they'd probably fire you. They would tell you you're insubordinate. Politicians who are voting against the American family, the American worker, ignore the immigration laws, and do all these other things are being insubordinate. Probably 70 to 80% of all Americans, at least now, want our borders secured. Any politician who equivocates, who says, well, first we'll do this and then we'll do, no, that's insubordination. That's insubordination. If your boss says, I want you here at 8 o'clock sharp, I want you to wear a necktie and have shine shoes, and this is how I want you to answer the telephone, you don't say to the guy, well, I'll come here at 8 o'clock, but then I'll go off and do some shopping. No, it doesn't work that way. There's no and then. We want our borders secure. We want our immigration laws enforced. It's very simple. And if they can't get it through their head, then they're going to learn about it in the voting booth. They're going to learn about it in terms of who it is that you're going to support for election. We've got to have the guts to really and truly think about what the First Amendment talks about. Redress of grievances, the right to peaceably assemble. And that's what's needed. That's what's needed. You're probably sitting there now listening to me and saying, boy, Mike Cutler is right. And then you'll go outside, fire up the old barbecue. I hope you have a wonderful dinner. The weekend is coming. That's a great thing. But if you don't make the phone call, if you don't send the letter, if you don't arrange an appointment to meet with that elected representative or at least with a member of his or her staff, then I'm wasting my time and my breath, and so are you. It's not enough that you agree with me and you tell your neighbors about this, and if you do, by the way, it's not a bad thing. I'm trying to educate as many people as I can. But I'm counting on you to make those phone calls on Monday morning. I'm counting on you this weekend, perhaps, to send off a letter to an elected representative and say to the guy, this nonsense has got to stop. Because ultimately, it's the citizens of our country, the citizens of our country, whose voice needs to be heard. And that's what this is really about, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why I take to this, to the airways or the computer ways, as it was, the internet, on Fridays to discuss these issues with you, because I'm trying to get as many of our fellow Americans to understand what really needs to be done. Not the illusion, not this nonsense. We're going to have a virtual fence, which I predicted would stop virtually nobody. Now, the time has come and gone for illusions and a magic show and Kabuki theater and a Potemkin village. The time has come for our borders to be secured, for our immigration laws to serve the purpose for which they were intended, to protect America and Americans. There's nothing xenophobic about it. There's nothing unreasonable about it. And by the way, I want you to remember that Mexico already has a fence that separates itself from Guatemala. And if you violate the immigration laws in Mexico, I guarantee you, if you're found and they will look for you, you will be in jail. There will be no games. This double standard has got to stop. Our country is on its way to becoming a third world country. When 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 American families is living below the poverty line, when millions of American kids go to bed hungry at night without proper nutrition, when many more homes are getting foreclosed and people are winding up homeless, and when other houses are losing their value because there's now vacant houses down the block, and drug dealers and prostitutes moving into those vacant houses, eroding the value of the homes in which the people are still living and still making the mortgage payments, then we're all paying a price for the lunacy that we are witnessing. Alan Greenspan bragged about the fact that he came up with the idea of these subprime mortgages for illegal aliens, even though a guy by the name of Stephen McGraw back in 2003 testified before John Hostetler, who at the time was chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, and Stephen McGraw at the time was the head of intelligence for the FBI, and he warned about the danger of accepting Mexican matricula cards because there's no way of verifying who these people are. That's what started the economic slide, the subprime mortgages and the credit cards given out to millions of illegal aliens who used bogus ID. Even after the head of FBI intelligence warned our Congress that those cards weren't worth the paper they were written on. But the American people need to have their voices heard. I've got a big mouth, you know, people have told me this, my wife in particular, but it's one mouth, it's one voice, it's one person. There's over 300 million American citizens in this country today. There's only 545 members of Congress. Both houses, both parties. We control them if we are willing to make the effort. And that's what I ask you to do. I ask you to make the effort. We're getting on towards the end of the program. I want to thank all of you for joining me this afternoon. It's a beautiful day in New York. It's 84 sunny degrees outside. And I've got stuff to do this afternoon, folks, so I'm going to be heading out. But I again thank you for joining me. I hope to be here again next week, same time, at the same location. And if you like what I had to say today, I urge you to tell your friends and neighbors about it. I am doing my best to try to create a bucket brigade of truth so that enough Americans can get their voices heard to make the difference. I think it's starting. I think that the politicians are starting to become concerned about how we, the people, are expecting things to be done, that there has got to be no room for doubt in anyone's mind where we stand on these issues. That's why I always like to say that democracy is not a spectator sport. Again, I would love for you to go visit two websites in particular. One of them is my own website, and that's michaelcutler.net. But please, just as importantly, I would love for you to go visit Californians for Population Stabilization's website, and their website is capsweb.org. They have a lot of good material, a lot of good writers. They've been working their tails off to try to fix some of the crazy stuff that's been happening in that wacky state. And I hope they're successful, and I'm honored to work with them. So again, please visit both of our websites, capsweb.org, michaelcutler.net, and I wish you all a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you next week at the same time. And please call in, write down the number, 310-982-4145. I'll be here. I hope you will too. Goodbye, everybody.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.